Most of my colleagues in cognitive neuroscience believe that our senses were shaped by natural selection, that we evolved, and that the selection pressures are such that those creatures that saw the world more accurately had a competitive advantage over those who saw less accurately. And so they were more likely to pass on their genes that coded for the accurate perceptions. And so the result is, after thousands of generations, we're the offspring of those who saw the world more accurately. And so we can be pretty confident that when I see tables and chairs and the sun and the moon and so forth, that I'm seeing reality as it is. No one believes we see all of reality, of course. We only see the parts that we need to see. But that the parts that we do see, we're seeing truthfully. And so I've looked at that from the point of view of the mathematics of evolution, the evolutionary game theory. And we can actually run simulations to see what happens, and we can prove theorems. And we've done both. And the bottom line is that the probability, if our senses evolved and were shaped by natural selection, the probability that we see reality as it is zero. That means not simply that I don't quite see the shape of a chair correctly, or I don't quite see the colors correctly. It's much deeper than that. The problem is that the very language of space and time and physical objects is the wrong language to describe objective reality. You could not frame a true description of the world in that language. It's not possible. So it's not that we get it off a little bit here or there, it's that this whole thing is just the wrong framework for describing reality. So that seems so counterintuitive and so out there that I think a metaphor is needed to help understand how it might be working. And the metaphor I like is the desktop interface on your computer. If you're writing an email and the icon for that email is blue and rectangular and in the middle of your screen, does that mean that the email itself, the file in your computer, is blue, rectangular, and in the middle of the computer? Well, of course not. Anybody who thought that misunderstands the point of the desktop interface. It's not there to show you the truth in this metaphor. The truth would be the circuits and the voltages and magnetic fields. All that complexity, most of us don't want to know about that. That's really nasty. If you had to toggle voltages to craft an email, your friends wouldn't hear from you. It's just too hard. So what evolution has done for us is it's evolved us sensory systems, touch, smell, sight, sound, hearing, all these sensory interfaces as a user interface that the purpose is to hide reality, completely to hide reality, just like your desktop interface on your computer is there to hide the circuits. You don't want to know about the circuits, and yet it allows you to control the circuits, right? By using icons and dragging them and clicking and so forth, you can control the reality without knowing anything at all about it. And that's what evolution did. Three-dimensional space is your desktop. It's a three-dimensional desktop, not just a two-dimensional desktop. And the icons are three-dimensional, not just flat. They're what we call physical objects. So tables and chairs and spoons and forks, these are icons that evolution has shaped to tell us about fitness payoffs and how to get them. So it's all about fitness. Even space itself is about fitness. The distance between me and an apple 10 meters away versus 10 miles away is telling me that it will cost me fewer calories to get the apple 10 meters away. It'll cost me a lot of calories to get the apple 10 miles away. Probably I should go for the apple that's 10 meters away. So even space itself is representing fitness payoffs and fitness costs. And so evolution, in short, has shaped us with a user interface that hides reality on purpose, where, you know, purpose is in quotes. Evolution is just a process. But the effect of the process is really to hide reality so that you're not distracted by it. You can control reality without actually knowing what it is. And I have this theory that I call conscious agents, in which conscious agents interact. The proposal is that reality is a vast social network, like a Twitterverse or Facebook. It's a big social network of conscious agents. That's the reality. They're not in space and time. They're just consciousnesses interacting with each other. As they interact, they are passing experiences back and forth. And it's an infinite Twitterverse, an infinite set of consciousnesses out there in this big social universe. Social network universe. And any single conscious agent in that network would be overwhelmed trying to understand all of it. Like if you were trying to understand Twitter, there's tens of millions, hundreds of millions of users, billions of tweets. How are you going to try to understand what's going on in the Twitterverse? Well, you can't. But what you can do is you can use visualization tools. Suppose I have a visualization tool that compresses it all down, shows you what's trending in this city and what's trending over there. So you compress it all down, maybe into something that you can see through a headset, so that you can actually, well, here's the Twitterverse in London, here's the Twitterverse in Edinburgh, and so forth, and here's what's going on, here's what's trending. Then you could sort of visualize it. That's what evolution did for us. The reality is this big, vast social network of interacting conscious agents. Each individual agent would be overwhelmed because it's infinite social network. And so what we call the physical world just is our visualization tool. That's what we have. So we've mistaken. So this is all a big visualization tool. Space, time, and physical objects are the way we visualize our interaction with this vast universe of social network universe. I'll give you one concrete example to really bring it home. When you look at your face in the mirror, all you see literally is skin, hair, and eyes. But what you know firsthand that you don't see in the mirror is the whole universe of your conscious experiences, your hopes, your desires, your aspirations, your headache, the sound of music that you're hearing right now, your love of music, all the stuff that's you, it's an almost infinitely complicated universe of conscious experiences. All we can see is this. And compared to the vast universe of our conscious experience, this is extremely simple. If I smile, you can guess that I'm happy, or I'm feeling some conscious experience, but a smile does not resemble happiness. It signifies it. And so think about it this way, your face, my face, the face that you're creating when you look at me is your portal into my conscious experiences. The face that I see when I look at you is my portal into your conscious experiences. It's a portal. But it's very, very small portal. Most of you is left out. You can't see it in the mirror. I can't see it from outside. When I look at my cat, the portal is even worse. I mean, I can figure out maybe the cat likes this kind of food and doesn't like that. It likes it when I pet, but now I've petted it too much. Now I need to stop. When I look at an ant, my interface is really giving up. I have no insight into the conscious agents in this vast network that I'm interacting with. And when I get to what I call a rock, my interface has given up, but it has to give up. I have a finite interface. I'm dealing with an infinite social network. Of course, the interface, that's its purpose, is to throw most of the information away, to simplify things and allow me to negotiate with this universe of interacting conscious agents without getting overwhelmed. And so, of course, at some point, it's not going to look conscious anymore at all. My interface is giving up. But what we've done is we've mistaken a necessary limitation of our interface, and we've taken it to be an insight into the fundamental nature of reality. We've assumed that reality fundamentally is unconscious, because at the simplest level, our interface is necessarily unconscious. So physicalism is a very simple mistake. This assumption that space, time, and matter are fundamental is a simple mistake. We've mistaken a limit of our interface as an insight into objective reality. But we can break out of it. It's a natural mistake, but we could break out of it. But I like to just call my theory conscious realism, because I want to be very, very clear that I'm saying that consciousness is fundamental, and I'm proposing, I mean, I don't know what the truth is. I'm just a scientist. I'm just proposing a bold hypothesis that consciousness is fundamental and it's real. Now, if that's false, it's false. We'll find out. But the idea of science is to be precise and bold, so that we can precisely find out where we're wrong. So I'm making a precise and bold hypothesis, and it's mathematically precise. I've published it, so any scientist can go out there and say, this is what's wrong with the mathematics. But that's the whole goal. Of course I'm probably wrong. I don't think any scientific theory I've read so far is correct, including general relativity and quantum field theory and so forth. They're brilliant, they're wonderful tools, we should study them. They're the best we've got so far, and they're almost surely deeply wrong. And so the same is true of my theory. I won't say it's brilliant, but I'll say it's probably deeply wrong, at least it's precise. And it was looking at the mathematics that I suddenly realized that it was suggesting to me that we might not necessarily have to see reality as it is. And that was so stunning, I had to sit down. But it took me another 20 years before I decided to actually pursue that using evolutionary game theory. I began to say, okay, is it really true, if our senses evolved and we're shaped by natural selection, can I settle this issue? would natural selection actually favor perceptions that show us the truth, not all the truth, but some of the truth? Or will natural selection actually drive truth to complete extinction? And then it was stunning to me. I was surprised how the math came out when it actually said, for very deep principled reasons, that natural selection would drive any true perceptions to complete extinction. It's not just been an intellectual odyssey, it's been an emotional odyssey. This is upsetting. It's actually upsetting to realize that something I deeply believed all my life is just fundamentally wrong. And so I can understand why people might hear this and go that this is just too crazy. Evolution, there's no selection pressures for us to know that we don't see the truth. If you have a user interface and it's working to keep you alive long enough to reproduce, it's doing what it needs to do. There's no selection pressures to also tell you, oh, by the way, this is just a game. You're not seeing the truth. This is just a user interface. So we deeply believe it. In fact, we believe that because we have to take our perceptions seriously, right, that we should therefore also take them literally. I mean, one objection people give to me is to say, you know, Don, if you think that that train coming down the tracks at 200 miles an hour is just an icon in your interface, why don't you just hop in front of it? And after you're dead and this silly theory with you, we'll know that that train was real. It's not just an icon and it really can kill. And I wouldn't jump in front of the train for the same reason I wouldn't drag my blue icon to the trash can icon carelessly. Not because I take the icon literally, the file is not blue and rectangular. But I do take the icon seriously. If I drag it to the trash can, I could lose my work. Maybe I've written a book and it's taken me a couple years. I could lose all that work, so I better take the icon seriously, but that does not entitle me to take it literally. And so that's part of human nature. We're inclined to this illogical assumption that because we have to take all of our perceptions seriously, we're entitled to take them literally. The reason we have to take them seriously is evolution shaped them to keep us alive. So if you see a cliff, don't step off. If you see a snake, don't grab it unless you know what you're doing. If you see a train, don't jump in front. You have to take it seriously, but that does not logically entitle us to take it literally. So as a result, it's not a surprise that even after I've sort of intellectually begun to realize that that's what evolution has done, this is just an interface, it's not the truth, when I'm not putting on my rational head and thinking about it, I'm just living an everyday life, and so this is the truth, and that's the way it feels. It's been many, many years, I'm slowly starting to have a different set of feelings like, oh, this is a headset. I'm now rendering that chair. I'm now rendering that light. But it's very, very slow for me. Usually I fall back into the normal, I'm just immersed in the truth. But virtual reality is actually helpful to actually spend time in a virtual reality world, which you realize, oh yeah, I'm rendering a full 3D world. Now I just deleted that whole 3D world. I'm not rendering it anymore. Oh wow, that's maybe what's also happening in everyday life. The headset, when I take off a virtual reality headset, there's another headset that I've always had on that I didn't know. And it's what I called reality, but it's just another virtual world. 99% of all mental processes are unconscious. The way that's normally interpreted is to say that the brain is real. Most brain processes don't give rise to consciousness. The ones that give rise to consciousness are really just a tiny fraction, less than 1%. I'm turning it around the other way. I'm saying it's consciousness all the way down. It's this whole vast social network of conscious agents, but my interface has to simplify things. So I only can see my whole network in terms of what I call my body. High levels, I view it in terms of what I call my psychology and my moods. Further on down, I call it my neuroscience, my chemistry, my biology, my physics, but those are all my interface just getting more and more giving up at trying to represent what's going on in this vast social network. So all I can do is see myself through my interface description, and what I see is a body, which is hiding this vast network of conscious agents, which is all coordinating together to create the single consciousness that's talking to you. You can see it's a completely different picture of what it means to be a human being, and it gives a new sense to what it means to be embodied. Embodied cognition is, I think, important, but this gives a new sense that even our embodiment itself is a picture that we come up with.